to BrassCast, a podcast series exploring the spoken history of the Illinois Brass Band. I'm your host, Rob Barnes, IBB historian. In episode one, I interview none other than George Foster, IBB co-founder. George, along with the late Bill Homer, had the foresight to start this wonderful ensemble. Sit back and listen to George tell of how the band began, and we also dive into all things IBB. Inspired by the fall 1990 tour of the Desford Colliery Caterpillar Band.
Oh, yeah, it goes back before that.
Okay, well, give us the roots of the Illinois Brass Band, please, George.
Yeah, okay. The roots are, so we moved here in 79, and about 1981 or so, well, no, we moved here in January of 1980. I started in 79. So about 82 or 83, I played a year or two in the Waukegan Symphony. And playing trumpet was Bill Homer. So somehow we got to know one another a little bit. And then there's a group called the Waukegan Brass Quintet. So Bill asked me if I would play in the quintet. So we did that for a number of years, and that's a key part of the founding. So during while we're playing, I finally decided I'd like to buy a euphonium. So
you were playing trombone then?
I was playing trombone, okay. Yeah. And so Bill said, I guess I mentioned it to Bill. He said, oh, why don't we go out to Booz and Hawks? I know the president. So his name was Neil Smith. And so we went out, and I tried a couple of euphoniums, and Neil brought out this English baritone. And that
What's
was
that?
It. I bought it. And Bill ended up buying a cornet, and I don't know, he bought the tenor horn, and I think it took years before his wife knew that. but anyway, it was that was the starting point. So while we were there, Neil gave me a tape of the Desford Colliery Band, and he said, they've won three championships in a row, and their national championships they were, and they're going to be in Milwaukee. So he gave me a contact name, and I called him, and I went up to the concert. Bill didn't go. I don't know if he couldn't go, but Charlene went along. And first of all, a tape, I was blown away with a tape. It had West Side Story in it.
First time you'd heard a brass band?
Yeah, it turns out I did have a brass band recording. I didn't realize they were different.
There you go.
But it was the first time I'd heard it. And so West Side Story was on it, which we have the arrangement. I went through a lot to get that, and the band has never played it. It's tough. And they
Making
need to
a
play
note.
That. West Side Story is a fantastic arrangement. So we go up to the concert, and it was just astounding. And I got a chance to talk to two or three of the people, including the baritone player. Just for some reason, I talked to her. And that really created the interest. So I was talking to Bill about it a little bit and said, you know, we ought to start one of these. So then in the fall of 1990, Bill has a gathering at his house. Neil Smith is there. So while I was sitting next to Bill talking, and Neil comes up and he says, if you guys get a brass band started, I'll help you out financially. And without that, it wouldn't happen. So that came about, and then it was a matter of putting the band together. And so the first thing was get a conductor. So I thought about that. So I ended up calling Dr. Painter at Northwestern. I didn't know him at all, never met him, don't know much about him. But I called him up, and he'd only give me one name, Bruce Bridey. Wow. So Bill and I went down to a Millar Brass concert that he was conducting, asked if he'd be interested, and he said he was. So then we had the conductor, and then it was a matter of getting all these people together. And so I made lots and lots of calls. Probably the first one I called was Mick Garrison. And that was interesting because he wasn't home, but his wife answered. And she said, that sounds great. I think he would be interested. So he was, and then he, of course, later brought in Mike Harloff, too.
Wow,
but,
okay.
Lots and lots of calls and so on. So that started really out of the Waukegan Brass Band tenor, and of course Dan Ballin then played in the brass band, in our band for a long time, and Bill Homer, but the cornet, trumpet player, had a, he was just one interest, he had an eye condition, couldn't go out at night, and the tuba player was, Ed Davies, was very much against it, because of the, he thought he was going to ruin the quintet, but eventually then Ed moved away back to Iowa, and so it dissolved anyway, but a lot of things had to happen in sequence for that to work. And the reason Bill even knew Neil Smith was an interesting story, because Neil Smith had moved here to be CEO or president of Booz and Hawks of Canada and U.S., and his daughter was getting married. So he called the service to get somebody. He didn't know anybody, so called the service. And it turned out Bill Homer was the guy who married the daughter. So Bill knew him, and that led to the contact of Boozy and Hall.
There you go.
So they gave us money, and we and so they would, we would have to submit bills. But first of all, they sent out, you know, we got a couple of tubas. I think we got the tenor horns and some of them, not all of them. And then the cornets, I know we had like 12 or so to try out, and we Colin was now conductor of the band, and we had Guy Clark was probably the main one that picked the ones that we
picked out the good ones.
And then Neil left a couple of years after that. I don't know if he retired or what, but then a Jack Foss came in, and so they kept funding us for a while, and then finally they were, things were getting tough for Boozy, and so then we didn't get any more money, but...
Well, weren't there early rehearsals at the warehouse? Talk about the rehearsals at the warehouse.
The very first rehearsal was at the Presbyterian Church in Libertyville, the old sanctuary. And I have pictures of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had... Nick Drozdoff was there. And we had Dan Patterson, who was director of music at Libertyville High School. He didn't stay... We had a little later Dennis Sullivan, the director of bands at Mundelein, played for a while. But Nick Drozdoff didn't stay. But then we gradually built from that, and other people through contacts and calls, you know, came in. And so we got a band and went and had that first rehearsal.
How did they like adjusting to the different horns, like the tenor horns and the cornets? Was there any adjustment periods?
Yeah, well, Bill was playing tenor horn, and Stan adjusted very quick, and I forget who the third one was, and then I thought E-flat 2 would be a trouble, but then Brian was an E-flat player.
Perfect.
And he's a very good player. So it was an interesting start, and then, of course, the other story was the first big check we got from Boozy was the one that Bill lost.
And well, I haven't heard that story.
Have you heard that one?
No, I haven't.
Oh, yeah. Well, so this is a big check. And he's embarrassed. He has to go back for it again. Turns out, quite a long time after he retired, the guy who took over his office called up, and he finds his check in one of the law books.
He just wanted a check. That's perfect.
But it was kind of an embarrassing time. So I was the first president of the band, and Bill was treasurer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took a lot of work to get it together, but I'm really proud that it's lasted that
30
long.
30 plus years, yes, sir.
And we've had some good conductors, and it's just been, it was a very interesting time for me.
I bet.
And I'm proud that it's doing so
well. You know, it's your baby. The baby you birthed is doing quite well at 33 years old now.
It's one of the greatest things I did because, you know, I've always been very much involved with music from way back. You know,
it's wonderful.
Started in high school like you probably did.
Sure, of course.
Had some good teachers and I actually learned the vowels when one summer high school I was able to take home a baritone, so I learned
figure out the combinations,
but I wasn't good and I'm still not fantastic at it, but the baritone never got up to the level of trombone with it, and I might have been better off if I stayed with trombone because the trombone playing suffered a lot.
Trombone's good. I love trombone. Okay, so competition scene. How did you learn about NABBA? How did you decide to go with the first one?
The first one we went to was in Iowa.
Washington?
No, Iowa.
Iowa?
Yeah, this is one, not the band.
Oh, okay.
That's the very first we went to.
You went to just to watch?
Just to see what it was.
Got it. I didn't know how it was,
but Bill and I went over for that. And I remember they played something that's kind of difficult. One of them did, and he says, "How can we get our guys to play that?" It was one of those tougher ones, you know. But that was the first time, and so I met a lot of people then, and then after the band founded, I got involved with NABBA, and Colin did too, and I was on the board for a long time at NABBA, and in fact created their first web page.
There you go.
Way back.
Wonderful.
And so that's how we learned about it. But I realized we needed goals early on, so I have those around. Some places are in the basement, but they're in the old Apple Works, and I can't I can't read the files, but I have printed copies.
Certainly.
And I created some goals, and one of them was getting to a championship, playing in NABBA Championship First Division, and we made it a year before the goal.
Wonderful.
But the other one that's never happened was starting a youth band.
I know that.
And I kind of talked to some of the high school conductors, and they weren't very, very, very supportive of that because they thought their kids were doing too much.
High school kids are so busy now. There's so many things going on.
They would have enjoyed it so much. And you can take a group like that and make it sound pretty good very quick. That's the thing about a brass band. So the other thing that happened, I got involved with the contest, and we went to a lot of British Opens and national contests. And every time I would go over, I'd go to Banks Music, and I'd buy some music and bring it back. And I'd hear things, I'd talk to people, bought a lot of recordings. But we enjoyed the Opens and the national contests a lot. They were, and Charlene was very supportive.
That's wonderful.
She liked it too. So it was an interesting start, and a lot of things had to go right. But here it is, what, 37
years later? 32, 3 years later.
It's still going, which is great.
Wonderful. Now, NABBA 93 did not have a test piece, correct?
Oh, we did. Yeah.
There was a required piece for each band in the section? Okay.
That's new.
Okay, I was...
Yeah.
Okay.
What was the first one? I forget. We did the second division.
Yeah, the first 2 years was in honors because we won in 94.
And we won the second year.
We won in 94 playing Laude, the Kerno piece.
Yeah.
That must have been the test piece, correct?
I forget what we paid the first year. I don't know.
Okay. I have it somewhere. Okay.
And then we moved up to championship.
Yes, yes.
And six in a row.
There you go. How about that? Well, let's back up a little bit. So when did Bruce left before NABBA, between 93 and 94?
Yeah, Bruce was the conductor about a year.
Yeah, he took you to 93, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
And he was he was a trumpet major, so he ended up going to Western Illinois University.
Where he still is.
That was his job. And I remember talking to him. He thought he'd stay a couple years and go someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And in communication with him after that, they began to really like it. You know, they had lived in Evanston, and out there they had a yard. The kids could play in the yard, and so they enjoyed. But I haven't seen or talked to Bruce since, what was our 25th?
25th, he came back.
But he was a very good conductor, and he was good for us. And although he didn't bring in many people that I can remember of, but he did a good job. And then we had to find a new conductor, and that happened because we were looking for one, and Guy was on the board at the time. He says, "Well, you know, Colin started to play in the band, and he conducts." So we
lo and behold, him. The back row, you got your
and he was okay. Interested.
Okay. Because then Colin started bringing everybody in,
And
including, oh
he
yeah,
brought
he's
some
brought a
in.
lot of people in. Lisa Ann,
Yeah.
myself, Laura, as we said, and a bunch, and several others.
Yeah, that was a and he did a really good job of conducting.
Oh, obviously he did. He did. We had 95. So remember, okay, so talk about NABBA 95 then, where in Toronto, the We Were Robbed
Oh yeah.
afternoon.
And I remember Ron Grunwald was saying, yeah, it probably was too early for us. Maybe it's good that we didn't win this year.
That's an and just that's an interesting way to look at it.
It was an
It
interesting
really
way because I
is.
thought we were robbed too.
Because I remember that summer, Colin would talk about it, and he would talk about NABBA, and he'd go, "We were robbed," and everybody in the back go, "Yes, we were robbed." It was really funny.
But you know what is different was different with Collins is after the contest, we would get back together, the whole band, and we'd talk about things
And listen.
and listen to it. And I think that's what's missing now. But the other thing is that John Melling, who looked at me as like an old guy for quite a while, and we got to be very good friends. But John and I kind of kept the pressure on.
Oh,
We
John was
made,
very good at that.
because we
And you
kept,
were.
we insisted that we have enough rehearsals. And so John and I got along just great. And we got together fairly often to go buy CDs and stuff
Oh, yes.
down at Salvation Army. And so I really miss John, but he was I was kind of looked on as the old guy at first, but we got to be very good
No,
friends.
John was wonderful for the band in
He
the
was.
fact that he was passionate about it, just like you.
Yeah.
He was extra willing to go the
Oh.
extra mile to do anything and put the band first, as you were, as
And
you
I'm
were
not
as well.
sure how he found out about us, but he came to a concert and I forget where it was. It was west of here, not too far. And he was at the concert and he came up to talk afterwards. And I said, well, why don't you come in to a practice? And he did, and he was hooked right
Lo and
away.
behold. All right. And once you start playing that
And you
music.
know, I know Tom was a fantastic euphone player, but John was very good too. And like all those contests we won, he did all the solos and he didn't miss
No,
anything.
John, when the chips were down,
Oh,
John delivered.
he always did, and so he was great for the band. So we kind of happened into getting good people at the right time, I guess.
Excellent. Okay, so once Colin took on the podium, the band got a lot busier. We started doing all the summer gigs and everything else to, and it obviously helped the band in many ways, financially and musically. How do you think the playing, all that extra playing helped us?
Well, it helped, but we only got better during contest time. And that's because you really focus on the right kinds of things. Blending of the band, the sound, the intonation. That's the only time you work on it. It helped. But I might mention probably two of the lowest points of the band. There were two low points I can think of. Number one, Jason Flex. He comes in with a t-shirt saying Democrat or something one time. And I had to refrain from talking to him because we didn't want to get politics involved in the band. Although when Obama was running, who is a Kim, is he still in the band?
Kim?
The tenor horn?
Tenorhorn. Kim. There's
Is
Kim's
he?
a cornet player,
No,
no.
what
Oh,
the
Doug Lim. Doug
Doug,
Lim.
yeah. He and John Mullen. We used to go, we'd go out to the bar after rehearsal, and we'd like everybody did. We had a couple of heated discussions on that, but it stayed friendly,
That's good.
and
That's
it
what
was
it
good.
should.
And let's see, that was a low point. And oh, the other was when we went to the British Open, and we had Russell Gray in, of course.
Of course.
And it was so frustrating because so many people weren't at rehearsals. And Russell Gray even said, don't they realize they're playing against the best bands in the world?
Very true.
And I think we still might have finished a couple higher
Sure.
if Peter hadn't got carried away with tempos. He just
He
got carried away.
Oh yes.
Because we played pretty good.
I thought we played really well. I did.
But that happened kind of accidentally also, because at Nava's, they used to have adjudicators over from England.
Mm-hmm.
So Bram Gay was over fairly often.
Yes, he was.
And I got to, I had breakfast with him one morning. And a couple interesting things. One was, we talked about Dennis Brain. I don't know if you know the name.
That's not a name
he
I know.
He is the best French horn player of all time.
Okay.
And he played in the orchestra with Dennis Brain. But anyway, I got to know Bram Gay. So when we were planning that trip, I wrote to him. I said, do you know any places we could play in England, do concerts? And he writes back, he said, would you like to do the British Open? Because he was on the, he was a key guy on the committee.
Let me think about that for a minute. Sure.
and so we were the first Commonwealth band ever to play in that. You went, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And it was just fantastic.
It was. What an experience.
And along the way, going to all these contests, I got to know the Childs Brothers. And that's the other thing that Neil said when he started the band. He said, if you get a band started, I'll bring in the Childs Brothers.
Okay.
So they came in like the end of our second year. They were over to play at probably a euphonium convention. So he brought them in. They played at the Presbyterian Church. Mm. The other thing I remember, our minister at the time was there and his wife wasn't. He told me later, it was so fantastic the first half. He called his wife and said, you got to go over here with this.
Get over here for the second half.
And then how about the Hawthorne Band? You remember that?
I remember the Hawthorne Band.
Yeah,
oh, yes.
That was interesting. And, I got to know a few of those people. It was a good band and they came over. But anyway, the Open, that's how it happened. And it was chancy to wait again. And I just happened to write to Bram Gay because I'd had breakfast with him and I knew him.
Oh, that's...
Because I made a point to get to know a lot of these people. And it was really interesting when we were playing at the Open. Before we played, Nick Childs came up and offered us good luck.
Wonderful.
I mean, it was great. So
wonderful.
They were just unbelievable players, although there are a lot of good euphonium players now, but Robert, they're very different. Robert was very much reserved, not real friendly, but Nick was a very friendly guy. Wow. And of course, he's been conductor of Black Dyke for...
Well, there you go. Proof's in the pudding. All right, so back up a couple of years. You know, we finished the string of the three wins, 96, 97, 98. The band's riding high. What are you thinking about at the end of the three-peat? Like, say, around 98?
Oh, yeah. We were thinking, I'll remember this, too, because I remember one thing we were thinking about was going to the one of the other contests in England that we could go to. And I remember we stopped after rehearsal, and I remember Lisa Ann saying, we've won about everything else. Why don't we do that? But we never got that done.
Yeah.
But, and then Peter pulled us through the last year with
Right. Okay, we'll get to Peter. What do you remember of NABBA 99, of us hosting it back almost 25 years ago? Next year will be 25 years when we hosted.
With the Hawthorne Group?
No, that was a little later. We hosted in Pheasant Run after the first three-peat. We hosted, took the year off because
Steve Sykes.
Steve Sykes, there you go.
Because, I knew him by that point, I think, but he did the circular breathing, which I still don't know how they do that.
Ready for this? I have a student who's a junior in high school. Ever since day one, when I worked with him in seventh grade, this kid is circular breathing.
Wow.
And I'm telling him, I'm like, yeah, that's great. You can do it. First of all, don't do it because A, I'm jealous because I can't do it. And B, you can't get enough air in it. And this kid he still doesn't like, and all of his directors, I tell him, watch this kid in circular breathe. And they're like, what in the world?
I know, but that's probably what I remember most. It was a big hall, wasn't a great acoustic environment.
Yeah.
But I don't remember too much else about it. Nothing else stands out.
Well, I remember we worked a lot. I remember in like January or maybe December, January, we didn't have a site chosen and everybody was like freaking out. And Lisa Ann goes to us, listen, we got to get our act together or we're going to bankrupt us. Yep. So we pulled it all together. She's a project manager. She ran the whole thing and we ended up making a lot of money out of it and put on an incredible event.
It was a good event. Yeah, it was. And
it was.
Yeah, I just didn't remember, but I remember Steve Sykes.
Steve Sykes. Okay, summer of 2000, UK 2K.
Yeah.
Well, give us your recollection of that.
Yeah, we decided to take that trip, and Colin was very interested in doing that. And so he pretty much arranged concerts we did. Like, we had some rain, I know, and played. And so, well, and I guess the one thing that I really remember most, a couple of things. One was we played at a police band barracks. We stayed at the barracks and played for the East Yorkshire police group or something. I mean, that somehow tied to that band.
Okay.
And who shows up in the audience? Roger Webster. And he had just gotten back from Japan that day.
Wow.
And I was amazed because I'd gotten to know Roger. When we had him in. Were you?
We had him in. Oh yes. Yeah. Oh yes.
And he stayed at our house, and I don't. What I'll never forget too is that he suggested at that time Wallace and Gromit. Do you know them?
Oh, I know Wallace and Gromit. Yeah.
So we got them out. My granddaughter loved those. They were
nice.
And most people don't know them because it's clay animation, but they did. There was a movie called Chicken Run.
There, yes,
and that was the biggest exposure I had. But gee, they were just great. But yeah, Roger was good. Now I still remember. I said, "What kind of mouthpiece you play?" That's a flugelhorn mouthpiece.
Okay,
you know, those good players, the instrument, the horn,
right,
makes a little difference.
Right, right.
They sound good on anything.
Well, there
you
go. In
fact, there was a study done in Vienna years ago, a few years ago, and they had some professionals and amateurs. And they had like three really good trumpets and three very cheap ones. And while the amateurs sound a little bit better on the good ones, the professionals, they made the bad horn sound good.
Well,
because they fixed the intonation.
Oh, yeah. People are just, you can tell people that just know how to get the good sound out of any instrument right.
Yeah, they do.
Exactly.
And I don't know how they do that.
All right, tell me about the Whit Friday March.
Oh yeah, that was an interesting one. Yeah, that I guess Colin of course knew about it. I didn't know too much about it in advance, and I personally, what I remember is I had an awful time playing, trying to march with a baritone.
It's
kept
hard.
You know, and trombone I did all the time, but the baritone was a different issue. But it was a lot of fun. I don't think we played that well though.
Okay.
But
and that was judged too, correct?
Oh yes. Oh yeah. Yeah, of course we didn't win anything, but but it was a good, you know, very, very interesting, good experience. And what did we play? Two or three sites, I think. There's a whole bunch of them. We played at least two. I forget how many, but okay. But it was a good experience, and it's still a big thing in England.
Excellent. Okay, coming back home, okay, summer of 2000 into 2001, the last NABBA.
Yeah.
And then Colin decides to
leave.
Time to move on. What do you, give me your thoughts and recollections about how that relationship ended.
Okay, yeah, well, it was interesting because what happened before that is, and of course money was always a problem, but Colin got to the point that he wanted us to pay him like $15,000 or $20,000 a year. And we had board meetings over it, and then we had a meeting to talk about it, and he was there. And I think it was even Amy brought it up first, because I was going to, well, if we're going to talk about Colin the salary, he can't be in the meeting. So we had to move
Excuse
him out of the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really... it was really a money issue, and there was just no way we could afford what he wanted at that time. And a lot of people, I think, got the opinion that it was the band's fault, but it really wasn't. It was, he wanted too much money. I think it was $20,000 he wanted, something like that.
It was an insane amount.
There was just no way we could begin to afford that. And it was at Rick Nelson's house, the meeting.
I remember that meeting. We were there. Both Lisa Ann and I were there. Oh, yeah.
And so that, it was kind of a hectic breakup, but yeah, those things happened.
It had to happen. Okay.
So then we had to search for a conductor.
What do you remember of the search, of that search that ended up with Peter?
One thing I remember when, I can't remember who brought the people in because I wasn't too much involved with that, but I remember when Peter tried out, I was thinking, he tries to get music out of every note.
He's the anti-Colin is why I always call him, right? Colin was very regimented, very note. Peter is so musical.
He was.
Lyrical.
And yet he just got carried away at the open.
Yes, he did.
But Peter did a good job, although... You know, I was president then. We had some issues at times.
We're
kind of hectic.
We won two in a row because we won 02 and 03 when we tied with Columbus.
Yeah, he was a conductor.
He was a conductor for those two.
Yeah.
He took us to the British Open. So we had some success.
He did. And I'll bet Colin really resents the fact that he left because of that. I haven't talked to Colin because, like I said, that time I was down and he walks up to talk to you and didn't say anything to me.
Oh, Colin? Oh, that was pre-NABBA of 03, of 23, yeah?
Yeah.
Huh? I know.
So I haven't talked to him. I don't know. I mean, I didn't. We got along pretty good. I mean, we had frequent discussions.
Oh, sure.
But it really was a salary issue.
Of course, yeah. It really was. Okay, so going on into Peter's run, then all of a sudden we have a little bit of an exodus in the band because another band is started up in the city by our former music director. And lo and behold, all of a sudden...
We lose people.
We lose a lot of people. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, well, I remember that the conditions that Amy left under. She plays a concert. We thought she was sticking, and all of a sudden she said, "Oh, I'm leaving." And then Guy Clark left, which Guy Clark is an interesting story. That goes back to the start, almost the start. Guy was working at Abbott, and I don't know if he played in our church, but I knew him. And I thought, boy, there's a guy we need to get in the band. But I was afraid to ask him because I'm afraid he'd say no. So his boss name was Ken, and he was another R&D manager at Abbott Diagnostics. And so I was talking to Ken, and Ken says, "Well, I'll ask him." So a couple days later at lunch, he gives me the high sign. He's in.
He's in. Oh, that's
so
fabulous.
So that's how Guy got in the band. So I was very surprised that that both of them left. I just really...
Laura did too. And yeah. We got Guy, Laura, Amy...
Stan was,
I was looking at the history. Stan was here for a couple more years before he left.
He was.
Yes. Stan was there for a bit. Yeah. Yeah. So then 2000, we took 2003 off. 2004 was Charleston. Yeah. And then it was, and we had a little bit of a dark area there. Yeah.
What I remember about that is it was the toughest place to get to. And you're flying in and you're landing on like a hilltop in Charleston. But yeah, I hadn't thought much about the individual contest for a long time.
Yeah.
But I still remember the one in, I think it was in Columbus when we got lost. Remember that one?
Oh, no, that was 98. That was Lexington, which is the end of the first three-peat.
Lexington,
that was Lexington 1998. Because remember, everybody is so focused on getting the three-peat, and then all of a sudden, this is going on, and nothing is happening, and to the recording, and it's pretty scary.
The interesting thing was that what Brian used to do would check out the acoustics of the halls when he was playing. And I remember him telling you, this is a dry hall. We have to play a little differently. And so adjust the sound. But what I remember was when we got lost, and then in the write-up, Bram Gay says, happens to the best.
Yes. And then, well, remember, it's going along, and you hear there's a deep, deep ripple of notes, and all of a sudden Dave Oakley comes in at his part, like, bam, 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 and he sets us off.
And I still don't know how that happened in a way, because we usually, when we were winning, we probably played our best at the contest that we ever played it. And that's because everybody was committed. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough thing to get in a group. But that's the other reason we won a lot, I think, is we had that core group.
We didn't have much turnover.
Correct. Very little turnover. Oh, yes. And whatever we had to fill in, we had a medical student playing re-piano one. I forget his name.
Dale. Is it Dale Nichols?
No.
There's another cornet player. I have it all written down.
And he just played a relatively short time. He was very good.
Yes.
But he was a medical student.
I remember. Yes. Graduate. Yes.
And so when we had fill in like that, well, another thing I remember was one of the people Bruce had sub was an instructor at Northwestern. And we were playing one of the Wagner pieces. I forget what it is now. And it had some high re-piano.
Okay.
E-flat cornet, soprano cornet.
Okay.
And he didn't get it. He missed him.
Uh-oh.
And I thought, wait a minute, he's on the staff at Northwestern.
That means this must be some pretty tough stuff. Yeah, exactly.
But, we've had some very good players, and I don't know how you get that commitment. It's not an easy thing to do.
It's hard. It is like you say about having the core.
Yeah, it's. I don't know if you have that now or not.
Well, yes, yes. If you look at the rosters, the NABBA rosters from year to year, there is obviously in the cornet section you're always going to have one or two because it's the biggest populated section.
But you still got the basic. Good people there.
We still have the basic. Oh, yeah. Melody.
Sabaki's
still here. Melody's still here. Lev's playing soprano now. Lev is a beast.
Oh. Lev is back on soprano?
Oh, yeah. Lev is a beast.
He's probably best on soprano. He's really good.
Lev is a beast. And Brian, the other Brian Ferguson,
yeah.
Who was our principal cornet player now, he's fabulous now. And so your anchor chairs. And Melody Velour is still playing
principal horn. Good.
She is fabulous.
Oh, I can't recall how she came in, but it was obvious when she came in, she was really good.
I just looked it up. She played her first NABBA in 07 or 08, and she played second horn. She worked her way up, and she's been sitting
she's
in that principal
good.
Seat ever since, like, oh, over a decade now. And she
is the best. The other was the guy that got a PhD at Illinois. What's his name? Played it in the Open.
Sure.
You know him.
Which horn?
Tenor horn.
Oh, Phil Klickman. Oh, yes. Oh, Phil. Just saw Phil last weekend. He's doing well. He is teaching. He is up in Green Bay teaching head of the band department at St. Norbert University.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. He was out east.
Yes, he was. Very good. Oh, yeah. Phil's.
He and Melody are the best we've had.
Yes. Yes. Very good.
And you need an anchor, but. How's the euphonium department?
Euphonium. Mike Taylor's been sitting ever since Tom.
He's still playing?
Yes, ever since Tom had to take the time off.
Oh, because he wasn't terrible at the rehearsals.
Okay. But no, Mike's been with us for...
Oh, I know.
Jeff Banyatz brought him in. He was here for a while, left a bit.
And come back.
And he came back, and
yeah,
he has been... Mike is a monster player.
Yeah, I know he's good.
Yes.
I know. So he's up in the Tom category.
He is up in the Tom category, yes. We had Tom in. Tom conducted one of the Oktoberfest concerts in September.
Did he?
So we got to see Tom. Tom, his wife is not doing well, but Tom is still one of my favorite people, and it was great to see him.
Yeah, he was. I mean, that we first heard about him, I think, from a tuba player. I can't think who it was now. And he was down...
Playing in Bensonville.
South someplace.
Yeah, Bensonville, Winds is where he was playing,
and,
yes.
And is that south?
Right by O'Hare, just due west of O'Hare.
No, he was way down south. And
Coal City. He lived in Coal City.
And so I called him up and talked to him to see if he'd interested in him. Well, it was too far away. But then when he
When he went to Kingland.
Then
right.
He was interested in coming in.
You ready for the first time I met Tom Runty? Ready for this? The summer of 1980, I just graduated from college, from high school, excuse me, auditioned for the Wheaton Municipal Band on both trombone and euphonium, making on euphonium for some silly reason. And who's sitting next to me but Tom Runty? He and I are the euphonium section in Wheaton Municipal Band in 1980.
I didn't know you played euphonium.
Well, it's a valve, you know, I figured, I'm playing tuba now, so. So I, you know, I tried out on both horns just as a chance. And lo and behold, I'm sitting next to the one and only Tom Runty.
Oh, he was fantastic.
Oh, he's an incredible player.
Yeah, it was a big step when he came in the band, because John Milling and Tom as a euphonium section.
That was a section,
was about as good as any in Nobby. Although Fountain City always has some great players.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about that. The changing of the NABBA guard. You know, once we won our second three-peat, the new bands like your Fountain City come along and just take. I always equate it to people when I talk about how we did as a band. I say we set the bar here. Bands like Fountain City, that bar, and just raise it. How do you think they did it?
Well, they've got a lot of music people, music, you know, teachers and so on in the band who are very good players. And then there was a tenor horn player maybe from England that came over and joined them. And, you know, they really have very good talent.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of good talent. We never had the top talent in the Chicago area, though.
Think about it. Chicago is a big area with a lot of musicians. I still think the talent that we got was still pretty, pretty good.
It was pretty good, yeah. And, you know, that it proves that we won six times. But, yeah, first started with Florida. And actually that was interesting because there was a tuba player who was in Racine who played with us for a rather short time. He moved to Florida, and he was playing in
Central Florida. Do you remember his name? Who was that?
Garelli was a... Something like that.
Kevin, maybe? No.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Start with a G.
Okay.
And so they built up, and they were the first one that were a big competition. But I still think we were robbed that seventh year.
Yeah.
They were against us, I think, because we went to the British Open.
I think so, too.
And
yeah.
People were against us.
Yeah.
And Steve Sykes, unfortunately, was part of that.
our old friend Steve Sykes.
Yeah, I like Steve, but then that kind of changed things a little bit. But.
Wait, wasn't he part of wasn't that 98 in Minnesota?
Yeah.
With the whole story with Steve, who's the euphonium player that he, Stephen Mead.
Oh,
Stephen Mead, the pennying into the bathroom. Do you remember that story?
Yeah, you know, that. Oh. And Steve told me, he said... And I remember we played someplace in Michigan and Steve Mead was playing there, and I went up to talk to him, and he was not a very friendly guy. But Steve told me, he said, somebody, a third cornet player in England, had locked him in a bathroom. And he said, that guy didn't have to buy a drink ever again after that. So he was, that's just kind of his nature, you know, he was...
Oh, I have a Stephen Mead story. We were playing the first time in Northwestern for the Tuba Euphonium Conference. Yeah. So he played the last piece with us. He plays his solo, goes off, and he takes off, and he's gone for 20, 30 minutes. We're cleaning up the stage, and his music. I see his music. I go, who wants Stephen's solo music? Barb Swan goes, I'll take it. I give it to Barb. Steve Mead comes back about 5 minutes later looking for his music and goes nuts. Where's my music? Who took my music? And I'm going, uh-oh, I got to find this music or I've just started an international event. So I have to go run and hunt down Barb and get Steve's music back.
Yeah, he's a different kind of guy, but, you know, so different than the Childs brothers, although Nick was the outgoing one. But you know, he was very easy to talk to. Bob, a little less difficult because I used to, you know, manage to see them almost every contest we went to in England. And, Nick, I was amazed when he came up when we were in the Open.
That's wonderful. I mean, some of those stories and some of those memories are just.
It was just, yeah, it was, good time. But I really made it an effort to get to learn a lot of those people. Like when I can't remember how I met Phil McCann. Do you know that name?
I do not.
Phil McCann was the cornet player.
Okay.
A few years ago, and he used to compare it to playing the violin. I mean, he was very good. So somehow we got to know him, and I know that he actually interviewed at some place out in the West, and I even met him at O'Hare, and at that time he had one of those special mutes that are made, and he actually could practice
mute.
Plane.
Sure. On the plane?
And he did. And so we got to know him, and I met him at O'Hare. And then later, I wrote to him that we're coming over to England. So he told me about a concert. And so we arrive, we get there. He introduces us, and he invites us over to his house for dinner.
Wonderful.
So Phil McCann, I have a special feeling for it, too.
That's wonderful.
He was very good, and they're of course, up in the Yorkshire area.
Wonderful.
But he was the cornet player at one time.
That's fabulous.
So I got to know a lot of those people. And, you know, it's funny how the best conductor, the most famous conductor I ever played under, I started in high school. We had the Lafayette Band and Lafayette Orchestra. And it was conducted by the concertmaster of the Indianapolis Symphony.
Okay.
And that's, for some reason, the Max Woodbury, the principal trumpet, came to Lafayette once a week, and that's who I took lessons from. But one of the concerts we had in Percy Grainger, I got to meet him, played under him.
Oh.
But what I'll never forget, the guy was in his 80s, in our band room who has stairs like this at one end. He goes running up the stairs. He's 80-something years old.
Wonderful.
But wonderful. Yeah, he was almost famous. And then in college, we had the Member of the City Service Band.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they, Paul Lavelle, and they actually did the broadcast at Purdue.
That's nice.
So a picture taken with Paul Lavelle, so I got to meet him.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So a lot of good experiences. But the band is really what I remember the most.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful. Okay, a couple more things. We're getting on 50 minutes. Let's wrap this up in a few. Give us your thoughts on when Ryan Nelson took over the podium of IBB.
Well, yeah, I was instrumental in getting him, and I was concerned about what he learned the repertoire. Same way with Peter, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he would, but he never did. But very good conductor, but it didn't work out very well because, you know, he just didn't get into brass bands at all.
Yeah.
Where Steve Sykes, or Steve...
Squires. Squires?
Conductor now, Steve.
Steve Squires.
Yeah. Colin had him in to help.
He
us
was, remember, he...
Very good.
He was Colin's primary sub.
And he always was very helpful. But see, he got into it somewhat. He's still not really into it, you know, like some of us got
like,
into
right,
it.
Right.
But yeah, that was, but I don't know why, I know the bands have gotten better. I don't know why they can't win again. That's been a big, big disappointment.
I think there's so many variables. There are so many variables that are out of our control. You know, it's just us. We're not, we have no idea what the other bands are playing. And like I said earlier, we raised the bar and everybody saw that and took that bar and just put it up here.
Yeah.
So
they may be paying people. You don't know.
Well, that is very true.
I mean, that's been rumored at times, but you don't know. But
the activity has changed a lot in so many ways over the years. It's better. I think for the better because there's better music being played. But I listened to some of the championship caliber test pieces now, and there are very, it's not something I would want to play or necessarily want to listen to again.
Well, yeah, I personally feel that the best music is being written for brass band versus orchestra. I mean, it's pretty hard. Strings really grate on you when you have dissonance.
You can get by with it
in the brass band.
I can see that.
But I think some of the brass band pieces are just marvelous. And although I'm back to listening to a lot of symphonic music. I'm a Mahlerian.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. No, there's nothing wrong with that. All right, let's wrap it up, George. I want to thank you for your time. Any final words you want to say? I would like, first of all, just to thank you for your vision for starting this incredible ensemble.
A lot of work, and I enjoyed it. It was tough because I was working full time at Abbott, but you know, it was a lot of work, but it was well worth it. And it wouldn't happen without Bill Homer.
Well, Bill was another wonderful human being, and he has obviously missed. And of you were like Batman and Robin. Who's Batman and Robin? But you guys did it.
Yeah, but I don't know why Bill didn't stay in the band longer. I'm not sure why. I'll never forget when he retired, though. He was still in the Waukegan Brass Quintet, and he retired. And I said, I was surprised because he wasn't all that old. And he said, well, I'm just tired of trying to convince people the grass is orange. Bill.
That's a neat way to think about Bill. It really is.
Or his sense of humor.
Good sense of humor.
We used to go, after I'd retired, we used to go out to breakfast once a week. So we used to go to Cracker Barrel, which he now is under. So one day we stopped in the restroom and he got the high urinal and the low one. He says, I'll take the low one. I don't want to hit bottom. That's Bill Homer. He was a great guy.
He was.
I miss him. Yeah, we had breakfast a lot of times, and then we changed to McDonald's close to him because he was getting, with Parkinson's, getting a little tougher to get around. But then they moved to Florida, and I only talked to him once, I think, probably a couple months before he passed away. Mm. They called. I mean, I thought they'd changed phone numbers, so I didn't even try to call him.
Mm.
But they hadn't.
Oh, sure. Keep your cell phone the same. Okay. Well, thank you again.
You're welcome.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for your vision.
And thank you for doing the history, because I was always going to do it and I never got to it.
It's been my COVID project. I started it when the pandemic, we started locking down. I needed something to do.
So that's where I started.
And this is just the next iteration of it. But
yeah, I'd like to put together, I wish you could get a roster of all the people that have played. And
I've tried.
Yeah, it's fine. I've got some of that stuff.
I'm trying, yeah.
But I've got stuff downstairs that, I don't know, maybe you can find it in the file cabinet. There's a lot of, like, the original flyers I sent out and all that kind
of
stuff.
Wonderful. Well, let's go do some work on that.
I can't go down, though.
Okay.
But you can do it.
Okay. We're going to sign off. Thank you again, George.
Okay.
And we'll talk.